You're listening to In Focus. I'm John Damschutter, and we're going to be talking about the only story that matters suddenly, the worldwide coronavirus pandemic that has shut down much global commerce and thrown the world into an economic tailspin. My guest has a unique perspective on this issue. John McGorry, now safely back in Columbus after 6 years as a teacher in Wuhan, China. Now, of course, Wuhan is where the coronavirus originated, and John was there until the U.S. government evacuated him and other Americans the first week of February. So, John, let's start at the very beginning. Take us back to the moment you realized that there was some unknown health threat in Wuhan.
Yeah, it started slowly, just like it's starting here in Columbus, or the state of Ohio, or the nation. You know, you hear, oh, there's a virus out there. You know, the Chinese government was a little slow telling us about it, but that was on. Then one night I was on a subway in Wuhan. I had just gone out to a dinner with some friends to say goodbye, and we stopped at a stop, and these guys with megaphones get on the train, and everybody was ordered off the train, and we all had to get off. And at that point in time, I started to worry that, you know, maybe this virus was a little bit more dangerous than everyone was letting on. And then from that point on, within 3 days, the city had been locked down and we were all quarantined.
So let's go through the progression in Wuhan as the danger became obvious. What happened between that first moment of awareness and then your evacuation? What was it like, you know, but what happened to you? How did they handle you physically? And then what were the psychological effects of quarantine and having your society pretty much shut down?
Yeah. Well, it's starting to, I have to say, I'll be honest, John, it's starting to wear on me a little bit because it's been, the first things we heard about it was January the 4th. At the beginning, more and more people were wearing masks. But in China, people wear masks due to the pollution issue. So masks aren't nearly as, you see them a lot more in China than you do in the United States. So, you know, at first it didn't register much. But then, as I said, you know, little by little, it got worse. And then I had a friend who told me that villages outside of Wuhan would not allow cars from Wuhan through their villages. They would block them at the village entrances, the roads through the village. All the cars from Wuhan and the Hubei province have the letter A. So if you had an A on your license plates, they wouldn't let you in. So when I heard that, the next day that there was concerns that there was rumors that the Air Force was going to fly and spray disinfectant over the entire city of Wuhan. That didn't happen, but everybody got everybody's attention. Then there was a message on WeChat, which is the Facebook of China, and basically saying that the city was going to be locked down the next day. And so from that point on, then much different than Columbus is that, you know, once the city locked down, you didn't see anybody on the streets. And if anybody's lived in a Chinese mega city like Wuhan with 11, 12 million people, I mean, there's people always on the streets and, you know, shopping and, you know, 24 hours a day. So to go from that to nobody on the streets whatsoever was, you know, like visiting the Twilight Zone. It was really, really disturbing and scary. It was like, you know, everybody knows a lot more. This must be a lot worse than everybody had let on up to that point. So then, you know, little by little, and I started getting contact from the media, and, you know, media tracked you down. So, you know, next thing you know, the New York Times and the NBC News and all these people are calling me up, and which, again, you know, I don't know if it's nice, but, you know, when you get called by the New York Times, it's a little bit on the flattering side until you realize what you're dealing with. And then it becomes a little nerve-wracking. Especially in China, where, you know, they don't like people talking to the media there. You know, so I was a little concerned that I could just disappear one day from my apartment, and that made me feel a little nervous as well.
Well, I should point out that you have a very good understanding of American public opinion. You know, of course, our paths crossed many years ago. Yeah. You were the communication director for the Ohio Supreme Court when I was covering the State House. So you're a particularly good person to compare and contrast the public reaction to the pandemic in China with what you've seen in Columbus so far.
Yeah, and I was out today, and I had to go get some groceries, and then I had to stop and see a friend. But you know, when you drove around Columbus today, I mean, unless you know what's going on, it didn't look much different. Traffic was a little lighter, but not much. You know, the parking lots, I drove by a Target, it was full. I drove by, you know, I went to the Giant Eagle over on the 3rd Avenue in Grandview, that was full. So, you know, you're seeing what's going on here. People don't have merely the same reaction as they did in Wuhan. You know, the people in Wuhan were, you know, once they heard about it, they didn't go out, and they stayed inside, and people here don't seem to be doing that at all. We'll see, you know, what happens in the long term on this.
Is that a difference between an authoritarian government and a democracy? I mean, we have to convince people, to listen, and they can order people.
I don't think, after living there for 6 years, and I would have, if I hadn't been in China, I would think the same thing. I lend it less to authoritarianism as I do just culture. The Chinese culture, people call it communism. I sort of got the feeling it's sort of like government by dad. Dad tells you what to do, and you do what dad tells you to do. And they respect their elders there. It's just the culture. And so, when the government says, hey, we all have to do this, it's like a family. That's what they're going to do.
You were worried that you might disappear because of the time, and they've just thrown out all those American reporters. I mean, mm-hmm. yeah, so yeah. Dad's got a mean streak.
Got mad. Yeah. No, I mean, it is an authoritarian country. It is, communist. But I'm just saying, just as a general person that you see, as things go on. Sure, the government runs things, but it's sort of like in America. The government does things, but the average citizen doesn't always see those things or doesn't understand those things. They just go about their lives. And, in China, the same way. I mean, if you're just leading your normal life, it's not an oppressive thing where the police are always out everywhere and you can't go anywhere. It's not that way at all. So, in that sense, they do crack, though. The media definitely cracks down. The government cracks down on the media. I know there was a big thing that went on when Dr. Li died, the one of the 8 doctors who tried to tell the people of Wuhan on social media that, the virus was spreading and that it was dangerous, and they were all arrested. They apologized, and the government let them out. And then about a week later, Dr. Li contracted the coronavirus, and he's since passed away. So, that shows you some of the problems that's still going on. I know the president has made comments that, Chinese government would have been more forthcoming and letting the world know of this, that we might have been able to avoid some of the spread. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. I'm no doctor, so I'm not going to get there. But so the authoritarianism, though, did slow it down. And I had a friend, somebody that I worked with on the newspaper Chinese, and he was on the executive committee for the city of Wuhan, one of the 30 people that run the city. And he was telling us as late as, the 4th of January, that it was just all but a social media hoax, the whole virus. And this was after, the government released on the 31st of December that there were 44 people that were sick with the illness. So there was definitely problems that maybe could have been avoided.
Do you have any thoughts on the source of the pandemic? There have been so many stories here about how the virus was first transmitted. Some say markets where wild animals are sold for food is where it originated. Mm-hmm. Others say the virus originated in a biological warfare lab in Wuhan. Were you hearing anything like that when you were at the university?
Sure. I mean, I've heard, the fact that I've been in China, I think everybody bounces their conspiracy theories all makes even makes sense.
So, well, I'm glad I'm not alone, John.
No, you're right there with everybody else. In fact, I had worked for the newspaper, the English newspaper in Wuhan, because our university was the one that supplied the editor. So we did English language editing. And yeah, so I remember the story. I edited the story when the virus, lab was developed and placed in Wuhan. So I know it's been there for some time. I've also been in open air markets, and there's plenty of them. And it's like going back in time. It's like going back 500 years. I don't think it's changed much. You know, just a lot of tables with vegetables and fruits, and then in the back they have cages of animals, and you can go in and buy a porcupine or whatever animal you want. They'll gut it right there in front of you, live animals. And, you know, it's a rather gruesome place at times. I think I've heard the one thing that I heard was that, you know, that they stack the cages, and they do, they stack these cages and they're just bars or, you know, mesh. And so the animals, the lightest animal is going to be on the top. So the bat was going to be on the top. And they said that the bat created it, you know, that's where the virus was created. So, you know, the bat goes to the bathroom, it trickles down through the cages, other animals eat it. The animals then get sold, they get eaten, and, you know, the virus is spread. So, you know, that's probably the way that happened. I mean, but you hear theories, and I know I heard one theory where, you know, that happened. What happened was that they were testing the animals at the lab, at the virus lab. And someone was told to get rid of the animals and destroy them, but they decided to make some money and they sold them to the, you know, to an open air market. And someone took those animals, sold them, and people ate them. And, you know, that's how the disease started. So that's, you know, and I've heard other ones as well. I'm sure you have.
You hearing these in China or were you hearing these?
Yeah, I've heard them both. Okay. I heard some in China. Okay. I heard some here. So,
that's
there was a. One of the teachers who's a photographer, and he was telling me about a few that he had heard as well, which were a little more sinister, that, you know, the Chinese government actually released on its own people to test the virus. But I don't believe that's the case.
So now you're back in Ohio after being quarantined by our government. Well,
I just want to say before you said safely back in Ohio, but I'm not so sure about that.
Okay. Well, basically tell us how our federal government handled you before allowing you to leave their confines and go back to Columbus.
You mean about the trip back?
Yeah, and I mean, you didn't land and get to go home right away, did you? Tell us about that.
Our government? Yeah, so that was quite an ordeal. So, you know, I wasn't on the first flight. The school had my passport. I was getting an extension because I was going to come home anyway. They had my passport. So I missed the first couple flights. I got on the third flight back, and it was a 37-hour ordeal that started from the time I left my apartment to the time I got to San Diego. We were in the airport we got there at 5:00 in the afternoon, and the flight didn't take off till 9:00 in the morning, the next morning. There was a lot of confusion, a lot of lines, a lot of waiting. One of the problems was the American government decided there was two planes that night, so they decided that the people, they split us by our name. So Ada L was on one plane, M to Z was on another plane. Well, one of the problems was the Chinese women don't take their husband's last name, so they were splitting families up due to their last name differences. So that caused problems, and that slowed things down. And that required our plane then to land at Travis Air Force Base in Northern California to drop people off that should be with their families. So we were there for 6 hours and sat on the airplane. Again, it was a cargo plane, so there's no windows. There was basically seats just bolted down on the ground there. It was, you know, little heating. They had put porta-johns in the back of the plane, which got full fairly quickly. There's, you know, very little food to eat. But it was, you know, so the flight itself, we were on the plane for 19 hours before we got to San Diego. And then, then we spent two weeks, in some some buildings and at the Miramar Air Force Base. And,
so were they checking you every day, like taking your temperature or what?
Yeah. Yeah, that's all they did was take your temperature. That was the only test that I've taken. And that's one thing you don't see, you know, as much around here. When I was in China, anywhere, I shopped at the Walmart. To go to the Walmart, you know, your temperature was taken. You had to have less than 100-degree temperature. If you didn't, they wouldn't let you in. Just about anywhere, I had to go to the police station finally to get my passport that I had my temperature taken there. So that seemed to be
Just so I understand, was that just for the pandemic, or is that just a normal course of business?
Normal, everybody. So if you were, here they would have the Walmart readers would be waiting for you, and they have a little like gun-like thing that points in your forehead, and just takes a second, takes the temperature. You're okay, go in. So that was a way of checking people. That's something that you we're not seeing here in the United States, and I don't know why not. I think that should be, it'd be one way to identify people quicker, and that's really all they did to us in quarantine, is take our temperature every morning and every night. And there were people that disappeared. If your temperature hit 100, they were gone, and they took them away to the hospital.
Well, you've seen China at ground zero of the pandemic, and you're watching Ohio lead the nation, really, in response to the threat. Governor DeWine has been way ahead of the federal government and other big organizations in shutting down normal operations. What's your take on his decisions based on what you have seen out of China, how bad it can get?
Oh, no, he's done a good job. About 10 days ago, I wrote an article about this that I posted on my website, and I predicted. I said everything was going to happen. It's like we're going to close the theaters, all the sporting events are going to close. It's the obvious thing to do. And he's and that's oftentimes what a good leader does. They do the obvious things that need to be done to solve the problem that faces them. And he's doing an excellent job of not getting wrapped up in the politics of things, but just doing what needs to be done for the safety of the people of Ohio. And I've complimented him on social media, and he deserves credit for doing his job, and doing it well.
So I'm sure you're, able to keep in touch with your friends back in Wuhan, and you're watching Ohio here. Now, based on, your knowledge of China, is life back to normal in Wuhan? Just give us kind of a vision of what's ahead for us, given that it's playing out just like you said it was going to, and you've seen this and we haven't.
Yeah. No, life is not back to normal yet. They are still quarantined. And so what they've done now is, one of the major differences between America and Wuhan, and in most major cities in China, is the housing. America, most of us live in either single family homes or a low rise apartment. China's, especially Wuhan, it's nothing but 30 and 40 story condo communities. So it'll be like 15, 40 story buildings in the community where all these people live in. So in some ways it's a much more dangerous situation because there's the elevators that everybody has to ride and the common spaces. But what's going on now is they're still living in their apartments, and I have friends that haven't been outside in two and a half months. They've been inside for all that time, and what they're doing is the communities get together, they buy food in packets for everybody in the whole condominium complex. They put them out in a courtyard out in the middle of the and I have a picture of someone sent me of how this operates, and there's packages of food, and each apartment comes down, gets their one package of food that lasts them for 3 days. The teachers that I work with, they are now quarantined. They can't leave their rooms. The school delivers food to them every couple of days as well. I know there's some Chinese bashing going on in this country, but I just want to say that, the people of Wuhan have really done, they've stepped up and did their part. Whether you call them communists or followers of dad or whatever you want to call them, they've done what they've been told to try to slow it, and it has. The last couple of days there's been no no reported cases there. So
let's talk about that a little bit, because when you left Columbus for China, and Wuhan is in the Hubei province, and you know, I mean, Governor Rhodes in 1979 opened that sister relationship city, between Ohio and Hubei province. And as you know, I saw you when you left, you know, it was how should I say, the relationship between the United States and China was friendly and growing, and over that period of time, now where there was a partnership spirit, I think it just reading in the media at least, both sets of leadership sees the other as adversaries. Did you see that change while you were in China, or are you just experiencing that as you arrive home here in the United States?
Yeah, you know, the Chinese people themselves, just the people on the street, they like America. I mean, I heard nothing but nice things about America and Americans my whole time there. You know, I would say, you know, if anybody knows, Chinese people can be, they're shy, basically, and they're hard to get. But once you get to know them, they're some of the friendliest people, some of the nicest people I've ever met. But I have nothing but kind things to say about the Chinese. But, you know, the economies are clashing. I think this is really more economic, you know, fighting than anything else. You know, China's, you know, it's come a long, long way from the 1970s and 80s to today, you know, and they're trying to grow their economy, and they have every right to try to grow their economy. Every country has the right to do what's best for themselves, but the more they push, you know, then the more America pushes back. And so I think the Trump administration has taken on China in a lot of ways that maybe other administrations haven't. So that's caused, you know, some bad blood between the two. But there's so many intertwined, you know, there's a lot of the economy from China and America are intertwined. You know, there's a lot of American companies that are in China. There's a lot of Chinese companies that are in America. And, you know, so there's, in some ways, you know, the politicians argue that underneath these politicians, a lot of the economic people and the business people, you know, are on the same page, or at least trying to be on the same page. So it's a little bit of a mixed bag, I think.
So coming back to Columbus after being at the epicenter of a pandemic and then quarantined by the feds. Not exactly the kind of experience that throws the doors open when you want to find a place to live.
No.
Tell me about that. Has that been a challenge?
Not really. I have had a friend, you know, I have a house that's in Westerville, but I rented it out. So, you know, I'm not feeling, I'm used to not living in much smaller places. A friend of mine though had a house that needed, you know, one other person to live in. So I live in a nice home in Worthington with one other person. They were obviously concerned, you know, about my background and being in Wuhan and, you know, whether they, you know, were open to, you know, rent to me. But I told them, you know, I've been in quarantine longer than anybody else they knew. Quarantine probably 5 weeks.
You've probably been checked out closer than anyone in Ohio when you think about it.
And I've been healthy the whole time, so and I haven't had any problems. And so, you know, I guess I used my Irish charm to convince them that I was okay.
Well, now, when you left for China, the thinking was that the period of life there would be worthy of a book. And actually, it turns out you have a better story than you could have imagined when you left.
Yeah.
Do you still plan to write that book, John?
I'm just sitting in a, you know, we're all sitting inside every day. Well, I get up every day and write. So I have about 90 pages written for that. And in fact, I talked to a Hollywood producer last week who friended me on LinkedIn and was, you know, talking to me about it. So we talked for an hour about the book and what had taken place. So hopefully I'll follow up with him as the process goes on, and hopefully something can come out of that.
Exciting.
Yeah, but you know, it's cathartic in a lot of ways to just to write about it as well, especially going through it again. You know, you get a chance to think about these things and try to reflect upon, you know, how fragile, I guess, life is, and, you know, and how important to your relationships with people are and taking care of yourself and all those kinds of things that, we all take for granted. I think a lot of Americans right now, a lot of Ohioans are probably thinking that right now, thinking, how much their lives has changed and, how important maybe some of the little things are. So maybe in the long run, we'll learn some valuable lessons from all of this. I hope we do.
I hope we do, and
that's
too.
sort of what I'm saying. I'm trying to put some of those ideas into this book as well.
What's your title? Do you have a working title?
Something about quarantined in Wuhan, I think. I think that's where it's at right now. It's quarantined right now. That's what's my Word document. So it's like I said, it gives me a chance to go back. And the nice thing about social media, especially WeChat, the Chinese, is that it keeps all your records, and it's almost, it keeps all the dates, and they have a translation function. So I have 650 contacts. And there's a running commentary on it every day, and you can translate it to read about people's lives that they're posting on there. So it adds a lot of context to, So I've heard some really, disturbing stories that you're starting to hear in America. I had heard these stories before about, there was a thing today I saw online where it talked about, you can't see if the person dies, there's no funeral. They die, and then they're cremated, and that's it. And I heard about a story like that in China, when a woman and her husband went to the hospital. The woman was okay. The husband got the disease. Then he died, and the lady waited outside the hospital for 4 hours just to watch the ambulance with his body drive by. That was the only chance she's going to have to see him to say goodbye to her. To her husband of 25 years. I mean, really, sad stories. I have another friend who's in Wuhan, and he answers emergency phone calls from midnight to 6 a.m. And he texted me, was telling me about, he's getting a lot of calls about suicides because people are jumping out of these 40-story condo buildings and killing themselves. They were locked in their apartments for 2 or 3 months, and they just can't take it anymore. I've read, the divorce rate is spiking in China. So, there's a lot of those social issues that come with these kinds of issues, I think they're already going on in China, and hopefully we won't have to deal with them in America. But if it goes on long, there will be problems that come out of it.
Well, forewarned is forearmed, and that should be a good example to all of us to be on our most gracious behavior to everybody, because people have a short fuse right now, and everyone is highly stressed. So, mm-hmm. John?
And we just started. So,
Do
this for 2 months, John, take everybody's temperature.
At least we don't have that high rise to jump out of.
No.
Thank goodness. Thank goodness for that.
The temptation, yeah.
Yeah.
I'll just sprain an ankle out of my, my one-story building here. So.
There you go. Well, John McGorry, Ohioan, teaching in China at ground zero of the global pandemic. That's the biggest health threat in the last 100 years. We're grateful that you've been willing to share your experience with us here on 107.7 The Wolf. And we're thankful that you're back home in Columbus, safe, sound, and relatively sane.
Relatively. I'll go with that. I enjoy talking with you, John. And, once the bars are open again, we'll have to go and get a beer.
Amen, brother. I'm up for that. I'll buy the first round.
All right, good.
Thank you.
All right, take care.
That was a good show, John. Thanks again.
My pleasure. I've been doing these for so long now.
Yeah.
I should do talk shows.
Well, I'll tell you what, that's exciting stuff about the producer.
Yeah, the guy called me.
Keep my fingers crossed for you on that.
Yeah, because like I said, he friended me. I saw him a couple weeks because I was working on this, but then I just sent him a note and said, hey,